Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a great one for you tonight, and it's just cooling down. It was a nice warm day here in California, Los Angeles. Scott, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good. I have some family in town, so having a lot of fun with some nieces and nephews. Well, actually just a niece and a nephew. But having a lot of fun with them, so they're down at California Adventureland right now. What have you been up to in the music world?
Got some good news. I'm getting some. I'll be editing some clips for next week's show, which is Incendio. We're actually going to probably be debuting some of their music, and it won't be out at the time. I mean, it'll be just released at the time that we do the show. So this is their first endeavor where they've actually started using electric guitars. So it's going to be interesting. This is a major change for them. So it should be pretty exciting. So anyway, that's coming.
Very cool.
What have you been up to otherwise than the family? Have you had?
Well, I put out, if anyone had seen it on my YouTube channel, I put out a little jam video of our guests from last week, Alan Hines and Nick Stubbs, and it's a pretty cool little jazz jam that they do here right after the show that we had last week. So definitely check that out up on
my YouTube
channel.
Yes, that was very
good. And just want to let everyone know, we have some giveaways coming up. The first one will be an Audio-Technica 10-series wireless unit for guitar that will be given away on our show with Norm Harris from Norman's Rare Guitars. That's in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have a Wampler Slow Stortions autographed by Brian Wampler, and we have an Eminence Governor speaker to give out. And just to let everyone know, with our guest today, you can call in and ask him any questions by calling 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815, and we'll try to take as many callers as we can. And we also have a live chat on our website, flowguitarenthusiast.com.
And also, too, we're going to be giving out a coupon code, right?
Yeah, we will be giving out a coupon code, so I'll let our guests mention what that is so they can get some savings on this website. And then before we kick and bring our guests in, just want to remind everyone, if any of our older shows that you haven't heard, you can listen to them either via iTunes. You can find us on iTunes, or you can find us on the website, latalkradio.com.
Yeah, just go to LA Talk Radio to Schedule 1. Click on Monday night. We're at the bottom of the Monday night page. We're the last show. Flow Guitar Enthusiasts, and scroll down, and you'll see all of our previous shows. You can either download or stream. And besides iTunes, you can also stream. We're on Stitcher. So if you have a Stitcher app on your phone, you can listen to us. And then also, too, there's also a LA Talk Radio app for Android and iPhone that will allow you to listen to the show live. So if you're, like, here in Los Angeles, you're driving home in traffic, you can listen to the show while you're driving. So that's kind of cool.
Well, let's bring on our guest. So we have today, we have Mike Piera, Mr. Analog Man, or Analog Mike. And, you know, for me, this I was first introduced to Mike way probably, I would say, maybe 6-7 years ago when I, like many guitar players who idolize someone like a Stevie Ray Vaughan, you know, went on a quest to find a Tube Screamer and realized I couldn't afford original Tube Screamer. And so had to figure out who the heck am I going to, you know, have and help me, you know, get the right Tube Screamer sound. And I arrived to Analog Man, so let's bring on Mike.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you here.
Well, to get
started, glad you found me when you were looking for Tube Screamers way back when.
Yeah, well, I mean, you were nice enough to answer my emails. It's kind of funny. It's just, you know, I probably sent you some pretty stupid emails that you probably get every single day, but you took the time
sure
and responded. So that was nice. So I appreciate that.
No problem.
So let's talk about what got you into modifying pedals and how did you got to where you're at now?
Well, I first started off selling vintage guitars in Japan when you could find them here cheap, and then that got tough, and I started bringing vintage effects over there, and then they got hard to find, and I figured I'd start making them and modifying them, and just got in at the right time, and it just took off.
So what did you start with when you first started modifying?
Well, I did start with the TS-9s. When I was over in Japan, I was walking around in the electronics shops because I knew what the original TS-808 used for a chip, and I found a bunch of chips over there in one of the little shops, and I came back here, and there was something called Usenet, and it was before we had, the World Wide Web. We had news groups, and so I was talking about modifying the pedals there, and some guy said, "Hey, I got one. I'll send it to you, and you mod it for me." So I said, "Sure." So I would do one or two, and then the next week I would do 10, and the next week I did a whole bunch more, and people really liked them. So it just kind of took off from there. I was the first guy who did any kind of modifications to pedals back then.
Where did you get your information on those original tube screamers? Is it just having them and tearing them apart? Or?
Yeah, that was the best way to do it. Like, as I said, there was no internet. Right now, you can pretty much do anything you want just sitting in your bedroom and learn how to do anything. But back then, you had to actually buy the pedals, or sometimes I was able to find original schematics. I got a huge collection of schematics probably about a dozen years ago. I would trade with people. That was also before the World Wide Web, just from email and the news groups. We would trade to get schematics for things. So I figured out a lot of things that way. And but having the old pedals was really the way to do it. And because schematics don't tell you what type of capacitor they use, they would just have a value. And I wanted to really, really make it right and use the exact right parts. So having the old ones around was really what helped me make the new ones sound good.
So what is it about the Tube Screamer that is so sought after? I mean, what's unique about that over, any other distortion pedal or gain pedal or whatever?
It was one of the first overdrives to come out. I believe the Boss OD-1 might have been a little earlier. But it basically is just a real nice, simple circuit it makes it kind of easy to play. It gives you a little compression, gives you a lot of mid-range to cut through with your band. You don't really want a lot of low-end. If you've got a bass player, you don't want to step on his toes, and you don't want a really shrill sound, especially with Fender amps, which they really work well with. Fender amps can be a little hard. They don't have much sponginess to them. They're kind of hard, so the softness of the Tube Screamer really just works great with almost any guitar through a Fender or other hard amp.
So where do the modern Tube Screamers go wrong compared to the originals? I mean, why are the originals so sought after in that sound?
Well, they're getting better and better all the time. Ibanez has started using the right chips in some of them. Boss has even started making their pedals better. They actually put the JRC chip that we used in the DS-1, we started using it about 10 years ago, and they started using that same chip in all the stock DS-1s a few years back, and they've even done some of our TR-2 mods. So the big companies are definitely getting better, and the Tube Screamers with the TS-9s or even the Max and OD-9s are still made well. They're hand-wired, so you can keep them going forever, unlike a lot of pedals that have disposable parts that you can't just get off of the shelf. So if you get a TS-9 or a TS-808, you can pretty much keep it running forever, and they're really quite good stock. The mods just make them a little better for the people who really want the authentic vintage tone, or if you want a little more clarity, we have our silver mod for people who are kind of tired of the extra heavy mid-range and compression a Tube Screamer has. If you want a little more clarity, then you can get the silver mod to make it a little towards that direction.
Now, I'm curious, have you checked out the Ibanez, the hand-wired version of the Tube Screamer?
Yeah, we've got a couple of those here. We've sold a bunch of them. I think it's really cool that they went to that far in actually laying out on tag board, laying each component down without a printed circuit board. So they had to have some technicians there that really knew what they were doing to build these things. So it's cool in that respect. As just kind of a cool object. As far as sound is concerned, it doesn't really make any difference. whether there's a little circuit board between a resistor and a capacitor or if they're connected together. So the sound is really not any different. It might be, you know, 0.1% better or something like that, not having the circuit board. But I think it's just a cool pedal to have. And the technology in it is really cool. It's definitely like mid-60s or early 60s technology, which is funny because the Tube Screamers weren't made until around 1979 or 1980. But
right.
It's definitely a cool pedal.
So what artists use your modifications for a Tube Screamer?
Oh, can't even think. There's hundreds and hundreds of them listed on my TS9 page, but you know, some of the bigger names who have been using them for a long time are like Trey from Fish. He's got a couple of our silver mods on stage. Whether he plays with Fish or whether he plays with his own band or whether he plays with an orchestra, they're pretty much always there. And there's just so many more people, I can't even think of it.
Well, I think you've even got like a signature Kenny Wayne Shepherd, don't you, I believe?
Yeah, Kenny has been using our pedals for a long time, and he plays a lot of shows, always has and still does. And he just, you know, beats on the pedals. So his pedals were falling apart a lot. So the Kenny Wayne Shepherd mod is actually more of a heavy duty option. It doesn't really change the tone, but we do things that keep it really good mechanically. Because I'm also really into cars and working on cars and auto mechanics and engines and things. So I'm used to trying to make things bulletproof, especially with race cars. With race cars, they have a lot of vibration, high speeds, high RPMs, so I kind of know how to keep things together, and that's exactly the kind of technology we use in the Tube Screamers. We use things like lock washers, Loctite, which is a liquid locking solution, and we use electrical tape in certain areas and things like that, so you could just play these things forever, drop them off of a bridge, and they'll still work.
And we have a couple clips of the Tube Screamers. One of the ways I personally love using the Tube Screamer is as a clean boost. So we have that clip here, and just demonstrate that. I believe it starts regular clean, and then it kicks in with the pedal.
Okay, here you go.
Yeah, that to me, that last sound is like the Stevie Ray Vaughan like ballad sound right there.
Right.
I just love it. I mean, it's
just, yeah, it's warm and just it's just a sweet sound.
Yeah, I personally use that setting, you know, for when I have my other, I have two Tube Screamers, and then I use that to double or stack on top of it when I want to do a solo. We have another clip. So you mentioned Trey Anastasio from Fish. So let's this is kind of a Fish-like clip.
Which one? The other Tube Screamer?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm
Fish.
Sorry.
Very nice. That's very good.
Yeah,
so,
that's a Tube Screamer.
Yep, that
and
is
the sweet sound they have is why they're so good. Unfortunately, there's a lot of mods out there that try to add a little too much low end to them or do other things to them that kind of takes away that sweet sound. So we really don't want to do that. We don't want to give them too much low end or too much distortion, you know, because they're great for what they are, and they're not great for what they're not.
Absolutely. Now the chip that's kind of famous in there that is the JRC4558D.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's other chips that have been used. Is there another chip that's kind of like you think is a secret chip or the chip that you think that's just as good,
well,
maybe
think,
even better?
I think as long as you have one of the decent chips that were used in an original 808, there was basically three versions. They're all versions of the 4558, which is like a second generation dual op amp. As long as you have one of those, it's going to be great. It's just if you get into some of the newer chips that they started using in like the later TS9s, those are more of an audio chip, or one of them, I don't know what it was, but it was really bad. But as long as you're using either a JRC or a TI or a TL 4558 chip, you know, it's going to sound really good.
Now, do you sell any modification kits where you can just send the parts and the instructions to anyone, or do you prefer that you always do it yourself?
I used to do kits for people that were overseas, just due to demand, But now, I mean, there's just 1,000 people selling kits on eBay, and they can have that. We want, if somebody really wants a quality pedal that was, you know, modified by someone who's going to stand behind their work, that's where we come in. If you want to get a kit and do it yourself, there's a million other people that, that can help you out with that.
Awesome. Now, how would you describe to someone like a new guitar player what the difference between an overdrive, distortion, or a fuzz pedal? How would you describe what happens to the sound?
That's a good question, because a lot of that is kind of semantics and there's a lot of blurriness between the two. But I think it kind of comes from some of the names that the major manufacturers put on their very early pedals in, say, the mid-70s, like, say, the MXR Distortion Plus. So we think of that as a distortion that has got hard clipping. Clipping is to ground. It's like a very hard, that actually used germanium diodes, but it's still a hard clipping. Whereas an overdrive, something like the Boss OD1 or the SD1 Super Overdrive or the Tube Screamer, has got a softer clipping going on. It's actually like in the feedback loop of the op amp, which isn't a hard clipping, it's a softer clipping. So that's kind of where I feel the difference is. But of course you can turn the distortion down on a distortion pedal and kind of use it as, you know, either a cleaner overdrive or even as a clean boost on some pedals. And some overdrives you can crank the drive up and it's almost a distortion. So there's not like really any specific delineation between the two. But, you know, when someone says distortion, you're going to think Rat or, you know, something heavier, maybe Marshall Governor or something like that. And when you say overdrive, you're going to think of something a little mellower and softer sounding.
Nope.
And then fuzz is completely different, too. Fuzz is really going to be almost a square wave. Almost sounds like your speaker is shredded or more of an intense sound like a fuzz face or the original Gibson fuzz was the first, pretty much the first fuzz available, the Gibson Super Fuzz fuzz tone. So the fuzz is very different. And they usually just use transistors that are completely driven outside of their intended range to get really nasty, gnarly sounds. So that's how you would kind of specify a fuzz sound over an overdrive or distortion.
Now, this might be kind of a silly or stupid question, but what fuzz pedal do you think most people would associate? Would they be going towards the fuzz face or a Big Muff or something like that from the 60s, or maybe even the Maestro?
Yeah, I think when somebody says, you know, if you tell somebody, I just got a fuzz pedal, what's going to pop in their mind is going to be a fuzz face. It's kind of the generic fuzz. It's been around a long time. They're still made, and so many people, from Jimi Hendrix to David Gilmour to just about everyone, Stevie Ray Vaughan, used them. So I think that's like your basic fuzz pedal that people use and can compare things to.
Now, when you use a fuzz face, would it be your opinion that you should use it with your amp settings clean, or you should have a distorted out amp and then add that as just kind of sending you over the top?
Well, the thing about fuzz faces is you can really use them either way, but they will work quite differently. For example, into a twin reverb on 2, which is going to be a really hard amp with infinite headroom, you know, you'll get a good tone, but it might not be what you want. It's going to be very fuzzy, maybe a little buzzy sounding, maybe even a little thin. Whereas if you go into something that's sort of the opposite, like, say, maybe like a little Tweed Deluxe that's cranked up, or a Marshall amp that's cranked up to, you know, 5 or more, those amps are already distorted. The signal's already being clipped a lot. So when you run a fuzz into those, the fuzz or any pedal kind of acts almost more as a boost or as a tone shapener. All the hard edges that come on the square waves from the fuzz are going to get smoothed out by the amplifier, which is distorting. It's almost like another gain stage, and it's going to sound a lot warmer and smoother. So some people will get a fuzz face or one of our sun face pedals, run it into a clean amp, and like, oh, that's not what I wanted. That doesn't sound like Jimi Hendrix. Well, Jimi Hendrix Marshall was on 10, so you were getting complete different filtering through the amplifier then you're going to get running into a clean Fender amp. Not that one's better than the other, but they're totally different.
Well, since you mentioned your Sun Phase, I think we should bring up, and we'll bring up a couple of times throughout the show, that you're setting up a coupon code specifically from this show.
Yes, we are.
Could you tell everyone what that code is and then where they use it? And
yes, I believe it's Flow, F-L-O. Is that what I told you?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep, your memory's better than mine. Yeah, and if you just go to buyanalogman.com and order any of our hand-built pedals, there will be a little prompt for a coupon code somewhere where you check out, and if you type that in, it should magically reduce the price of those pedals by 10%.
And how long will that be available for?
Probably a week or two. We'll see how long the radio show is up. I haven't thought through it that far yet. We've never had any discounts or sales or anything, so this is quite unique.
Oh, well, great. Well, I'm glad that you're doing it with us. So, well, since we're talking about fuzz faces, let's talk about your Sunlion pedal that you make.
Sure.
Before we get into that, so where do modern fuzz pedals go wrong, and then can you talk about where the older ones you think went right?
Well, a lot of the modern fuzz pedals are still based on the old fuzz styles. But, you know, a lot of the old fuzz pedals were really bad because they would just take batches of transistors and resistors and throw them in the pedal and ship them. And especially with things like the germanium transistors, that just won't work. There are several parameters you really have to test to make your pedal sound good. And Jimi Hendrix knew this back in 1969 when he would go to Manny's in New York City, and he would get a pile of fuzz face pedals and plug them in and say, okay, this one's good and the rest of them suck, and he would just take that one home with him. And he didn't know why. Maybe Roger Mayer figured it out and started modifying his other ones, or maybe he just kept choosing them. But the thing with the fuzz pedal is it's such a simple circuit, but everything has to be right. So we spend hours and hours and hours testing and sorting these transistors for several different parameters to really make them sound good and be reliable. And that's the thing that a big company really can't do today. It's not a production-friendly thing, but for us, that's what we do, so we deal with it.
So you'll buy a whole bunch of one transistor and then just eliminate ones just because they're not matching your specs, correct?
We sure do. We sort them out into different groups, different gain groups, different noise groups. Certain positions in the circuit you can get away with a little noisier transistor, where others they have to be really quiet and not have any white noise or random hiss. And you have to change other parts in the circuit too. If you have a certain gain range, you can't just use the same resistor as if you had another gain range. So everything has to kind of match, and that's the secret to getting a consistently good sounding fuzz pedal.
Are you seeing now with the parts that you're getting now that there's a better consistency, or is it still kind of hit and miss?
Well, the problem is with our Sunface pedals, which we use as half of our Sunlion, we're still using old parts, mostly from the 60s or 70s, because the new parts just don't sound the same. And it's getting harder and harder to find any old parts that haven't been cherry-picked. So, for example, I stopped selling our NKT-275 low-gain white dot Sunface probably at least a couple of years ago, because the last 5 or 10 batches I got from either the UK or Germany were just unusable. So we just had to give up on that one and come up with some other ideas.
Can you talk about the NKT chip and tell us what's unique, or not chip, transistor, and tell us what's unique about it?
Sure. Well, a chip is just made up of a bunch of transistors, so kind of right. But yeah, the NKTs, the reason that we specifically go out of our way to try to find them and have sold so many of them and so many people like them is because that's the one that was used on the early fuzz face pedals. I believe you bought one yourself in 67 or so. And that's what they all came with, and they just have some kind of a magic warmth and cleanup. They really clean up well when you back your guitar down. They get a really nice, sparkly kind of clean. I think if you listen to some of Hendrix's songs, he'll leave the fuzz face on and back the guitar off, and it'll be cleaner than if he turned the fuzz face off. It just it just lowers the signal into the Marshall and just makes it sparkly clean. And it's just a kind of a unique sound that people really seem to like.
Well, we actually have a sound clip. This is a standard Sun Face at first, and then it's your NKT version, and it's on an ES-345.
Here we go.
Very cream lick there.
Yes. Yeah, I'm actually getting lessons. I think that was Roger. Roger Philgate, he's a local guitarist. He's really great. I'm taking lessons from him, finally learning how to play guitar after trying to play for over 40 years.
I think we're all trying to learn. That's really...
Yes. You never can... Even Jeff Beck is still trying to learn, although he can teach everyone everything. But, yeah. So, yeah, it's good to hear from Roger.
Yeah, I've mentioned before on our show, is it's, you know, it's about a couple minutes searching on YouTube, and we all get, you know, humiliated by a 5-year-old, you know. So.
Oh, I know, it's sick.
So tell us a little more about your different versions of your Sun line. I think there's like two or three, I believe.
Boy, we've got a lot of different versions of the transistors available. In germanium, we have we still do have some of those original old style NKT-275s, but they have a little higher gain, which I personally like better. They're a little brighter sounding, and I tend to play Gibsons a lot, which like to have a little brighter of a fuzz pedal. So we've got the high gain NKTs. We've also got some red dot NKTs, which are really cool. They have a smoky kind of really mellow tone to them. Really beautiful sounding, but they're very, very temperamental when it comes to temperatures. They drift a lot, so... You know, I tell people that before they buy them, that, you know, you're not going to want to go out and play, you know, 100-degree gig at Bonnaroo in the sun and expect for this thing to sound great. I actually was working on a pedal cooler, an air conditioner for pedals for Al from Mo, but it was really tough because the whole pedal and the whole system, everything after about 5 or 10 minutes, everything, the whole system just heated up. And it didn't work, so I'm still working on that. But that's a red dot NKT anyway. They're great, but they're a little finicky. Then we've got some others that I really like, which are similar to the high gain NKTs. They're called we call them the TI UK. They're made by Texas Instruments in the UK, and those are a really nice, fairly high gain germanium. They clean up pretty well. They're not too dark, so they'll work with a lot of different guitars. We've got a high gain germanium. Which is kind of like an old 60s or 70s USA transistor, but they have a nice high gain. So mm-hmm. You almost get the amount of gain as a silicon, but it still has that warmth and cleanup as a germanium. And then we've got a bunch of, they also have the standard germanium, which is either an old Japanese, like 60s, 70s 2SB transistor, which I find really nice, or some old General Electric brand American-made transistors, which we actually got a ton of them out of these old keyboard organ circuit boards. I forget what brand they were, but we got a ton of them, and they were really good, so we're using those a lot. So there's like several versions of germanium. And then silicon, we've got the BC-108s, which were used in all of the original fuzz faces from like usually from 1969-70 up through the early 70s. Some of them have also had BC-183s, which we have some really awesome BC-183s, which have a little bit of the germanium sound. They're very smooth, but yet they're also very high gain, like the BC-108s. And then we also have some BC-109s that people who like Pink Floyd requested, because supposedly one of Gilmour's pedals had BC-109s in it, and so we made a bunch of those, and people seem to like them. They've got a little more edge to them, I think. They cut through really well. And, that's it. We've got, like, 10 different versions of transistors that you can choose for our Sunface and Sunline pedals.
Wow.
quick question. You were mentioning about the temperature, and I know that you mentioned on your the information you gave us that the temperature, especially with germanium, it really affects the sound, and when it gets too hot, it's really bad. But I wanted to ask you something that Joe Walsh said years ago. He was talking about some of his pedals. I don't mean to... it might make you cringe, and I don't mean any offense by that, but he was like really into the fact. He said like his 9-volt pedals, when he, especially his distortion pedals, he used to run them at 10 volts.
Mm-hmm.
And he said they sounded great. They didn't last long, but he said they sounded really, really good. Now, you had mentioned also, too, you had talked a little bit about power supplies. What I wanted to know is, why would it sound better at 10 volts, and can you do that without destroying the pedal, without, you know, using that much voltage?
Well, it really depends on the specific pedal that he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But normally with most pedals that use, like, say, op amps, like a Tube Screamer or something, the chips in those pedals were actually not designed to be run at 9 volts, although they will run just fine at 9 volts, but they were designed to be run at higher voltage. So if you give them the higher voltage, they work a little, they're a little snappier, and you definitely get more headroom out of them, which he might have liked. And if you want a little more clarity and a little more headroom, then that definitely helps. Like we have optional power supplies we sell with our Tube Screamer mods or some of our other pedals, especially like our Chorus or a compressor. Those definitely sound better with higher voltages because those chips were not designed to run at 9 volts. The reason we use 9-volt batteries and pedals is because I guess sometime in the 60s, some company made up these little 9-volt batteries, these little square things that you could stick in, and they fit really well. So that's why they're used in pedals, not because it's the best voltage to use.
So you could use, like, for example, on your Chorus pedal, you could actually use a higher voltage if you could dial it up?
Yeah, definitely. We recommend on our Chorus to, you know, if you've got like a Voodoo Labs pedal power or something, we recommend using the 12-volt output. They're actually like perfect at like 15 volts, but there's not too many 15-volt power supplies out there. There's mm-hmm. a lot of 18-volt power supplies out there where you can double your 9-volt power supply by using some specific Y cables. But 18 volts is a little high for certain pedals. I mean, it'd be fine for, like, say, a Prince of Tone or something like that. But the Chorus and the compressors actually have some chips in there that were not designed to go up to 18 volts. And all of our manuals and web pages will tell you for each pedal we sell, you know, what the recommended voltage is and what the maximum voltage is, because it's very important.
Oh, that's good. You could actually run them a little bit hotter. That's great.
Sure.
Yeah.
It definitely helps, especially like with the compressor running a hot signal like from a Les Paul through there. It's going to give you more headroom. You're going to get a little more volume out of it, and you're not going to get squashed as much, which mm-hmm. I really like with the Chorus too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so let's talk about some of your new products you have for 2013. One of them would be the in the compressor line, where you have a Rev4 circuit for your compressors. Be a great thing. Use the coupon code, which would be Flow, on your website. But can you tell us about what's unique about what you did this year for your compressors?
Yeah, the compressor. I'm really happy with this because. I've been using a compressor on my board, our compressor, for a long time, and there was always a few things about it that, you know, I didn't quite like. We were the first to come out with the Ross compressor clone back, I think it was around 1999 or 2000. It was very hard to find the Ross compressors, but they were getting very popular because of Trey. Actually, Wei Huge had made a Saffron squeeze, which was actually no longer available by the time we came along, and that was very similar to a Ross clone too. But we came out with ours, and then since then there's been dozens and dozens of them out there. But they all have a couple of little problems that I wanted to fix to make it more usable. I think it's a great tool if you can get rid of these problems. And one of the things I found with my pedal board is I use a volume pedal at the end, low impedance Ernie Ball. And the stock Ross compressor or a Dynacomp, which is a very similar circuit, has a very poor output impedance. So it's very hard to drive a pedal like a volume pedal or a long cable. And they sound kind of dull. So we put a really good buffer at the end of our compressor, and now it can drive really long cables, volume pedals, or, you know, if you put the compressor at the beginning of your pedal board and you have 10 or 20 pedals after it, it'll go through all those little patch cords and things and come out really strong. Other thing we fixed was all the Ross compressor clones and Dynacomps have a phase reversal. which when you hit your string down, it comes out of your amp going up, and it's not something most people other than maybe Steve Kimmock would notice. But if you split your signal, go to either two channels or through effects loops or things, and then try to combine them, whether it's in the air or in an amplifier, when you have two things that are out of phase, they cancel each other out, and it gets very thin sounding. So Tony Levin actually has been using our bicompressor on tour with Peter Gabriel forever, and he found that on the last Peter Gabriel tour, he was like, Mike, I'm not getting any sound out of the compressor here when I blend it in on his stick, because he's got, you know, stereo outputs on the stick. And I told him, yeah, it's because it's out of phase, and he figured out a way to work with it. But now we can no longer have that problem on the compressor. The phase is the same out as you put in. Another thing I found when I run my Les Paul into, you know, a Ross or a Dynacomp is you can't really get them very loud, especially when the sustain is down. So we boosted the output so you can use it as a clean boost. And the last thing we did was we made it so when you turn the compression or the sustain knob down all the way, gives you less compression, because sometimes you really just want to use it as a clean boost because it's such a great sound and buffering. So now if you turn the sustain down all the way, you get very little compression, and you can just use it as a buffer, clean boost, or whatever without giving you extra sustain and compression that you may not want.
So would you recommend, if you were to use a compressor, I mean, putting it at the beginning of your chain is usually the most standard
yes.
thing to do.
The only thing you might want to have before it would be like a wah pedal, or actually, I just do that because I don't have room on my pedal board for my wah, so that goes on the floor. But actually, you can even have the wah after the compressor.
Is there any reason why you'd want to have it like at an end of a chain or anything like that? Is there anything, some sort
at the
of
end,
weird effect?
Not really.
Cause?
Although Trey actually runs his Tube Screamers into his compressor, I believe. If you do that, you will get a more of an effect. More extreme sounds, but for most people, you definitely want to have the compressor early in your circuit. And the other advantage to having your compressor early is that a compressor is kind of the opposite of a noise gate. A noise gate, when you stop playing, it kills your sound. A compressor, like a Ross or a Dynacomp, when you stop playing, it boosts your sound. So any little noise that's coming through gets boosted. Now, if you have this after a dirt pedal or after a bunch of pedals, then all the noise that's coming out of those dirt pedals is going to get boosted even more by the compressor. So putting the compressor early in the chain will give you less noise.
It's good to know. I just want to remind everybody that you can call in at 323-203-0815 if you have a question for Mike, which our guest is Mike Pierre, Analog Man. So the other new product that you have out is a buffer pedal. Can you talk about
right.
that and what's needed for a pedal board?
Yeah, that's another thing that came about because of, you know, I'm playing a lot more guitar in my band now, and I found out about that certain pedals really needed that buffer to sound good. So you say if you've got one of our original compressors and you don't really want to send it in to get our new version, or if you've got some other pedals that or if you've got like a volume pedal at the end of your chain or some long cables, you're going to notice your tone gets very dull. You're going to lose a little high end and some clarity. What a buffer is meant to do is to take whatever your guitar puts out or whatever weak pedals you have and just to boost it up to make it clear and to drive through the cables all the way to your amp. And what our buffer tries to do is not to be, you know, really bright and hard sounding and really kick your signal in the ass, but we want it to sound like a cable. We want our buffer to sound like you're plugged into an amp through a 10-foot or 20-foot cable, because that's what most people are used to. So our buffer has a little extra tuning in it to try not to sound like, ah, he's got this bright little buffer thing on his board. And but having the buffer at the end of your signal chain makes all the pedals before it work better, and it gets your signal to the amp really well. And we can not only make a little pedal that's a buffer that you can either leave on all the time or you can switch on or off, but we can also build our buffer into other pedals. For example, that Ernie Ball volume pedal that I used a low impedance 25K version. And if we build the buffer into that pedal, then it's gonna not suck any of your tone, and it's gonna send your signal to your amp in really good condition. So you're gonna get a great sound.
And you wouldn't ever want to put the buffer at the beginning of your chain, right?
Well, it's good to have a buffer at the beginning of the chain too for certain things if you've got a long patch cord going into the board. But you don't want to have any buffers before something like a fuzz face, because those pedals really need to see your guitar's impedance to work right and not to get too bright, to be able to do that cleanup which I was telling you about, where when you roll your guitar volume down through a fuzz face, it gives you that real nice cleanup and that kind of sparkly thing. That will go away if you've got a buffer before your fuzz face. So you don't want to either have a buffer or a buffered pedal. And a buffered pedal example is a pedal like an Ibanez Tube Screamer that when you turn it off, you're still going through a bunch of circuitry, and you can tell that a pedal is a buffered pedal if you pull the power jack out while you're playing. If your sound cuts out, then you know it's going through some active circuitry. And you don't want to have one of those before a fuzz face either.
Interesting. But your modifications for your Tube Screamers, you make them true bypass, right?
Optionally, yeah. The Tube Screamer actually does have a pretty decent buffer. So if you've got, 10 boutique pedals that all have true bypass, then go ahead and leave that Tube Screamer buffered, because, it's nice to have a buffer in there. But if you've got a bunch of other things that are already buffered, you don't want to have more than, two or maybe three buffers in your board, because each buffer is going to change your tone a little bit. And you really don't need them. They might, it's just not something you really want to have your signal going through that many electronics when it's not needed.
Can you use the buffers to like drive a effects loop on your amp? Will that work? Will that actually?
Yeah, that can help. Certain amps have fairly poorly designed effects loops. The really good amps will have input and output volume controls or level controls on them, and kind of have built-in tube buffers or even solid-state buffers.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have that, then yeah, if you run a buffer in your effects loop, it can help that too.
Now I want to talk about your ARDX 20 dual analog delay. I thought it was kind of unique because it looked like it was a collaboration with. I'm probably going to say the guy's name wrong, but Obayashi-san.
Yes, yeah, so Obayashi.
Obayashi-san. All right. So not very good at that, but
<It's close. laughs>
But yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting how you did that. Can you talk about how that came about and why you just chose to go with that collaboration rather than designing it yourself?
We started out. He's a Japanese fellow, and he also works in China quite a bit, and he found a little pedal over there in the Chinese shops that Air, I think it's a Dafon or something, analog delay, and it had a pretty decent circuit, but it didn't sound very good. So he looked at it really closely and found out that by doubling the delay time and changing a bunch of things around in the circuit, he could make it sound really good. So we started out having those built to his specs, so they would. They made these little pedals to his specs, and they sounded great. They had buffered bypass, which is nice in a delay at the end of your board, because as I said, at the end of the board, it'll send your signal to your amp. So we did a bunch of those, but then we realized, we really needed to make our own, something that looked better. And I always wanted a dual delay, because, you have one delay you want to use for maybe your rhythm playing with a little short delay that's just in the background, like a little thicker than reverb, and then you want a longer delay for your solos with a louder delay, a longer delay time. And there weren't really any on the market that had the real three control knobs for a dual delay on each side. So we decided to do that, taking the great sounding circuit that we had refined in our first analog delay, and then making a dual pedal using that circuit and trying to improve it a little more, making the delay a little stronger, and giving it some more features. Like, we've got the effects loop in there, and we've also got an expression jack, which people love expression jacks on things now, where you can plug, say, a Boss EV5 expression pedal in to our delay, and you can change the delay time on the fly which Gary Clark uses to great effect. If you ever have a chance to see him live, he uses it like Tom Morello uses a whammy pedal at the beginning of some songs. He creates an atmosphere and he just gets this kind of a weird dipping the note, kind of whammying it with that. And when I saw him do that, I just flipped out. It was so cool.
You said Gary Clark, right?
Yeah, Gary Clark Jr.
Yeah. So out of curiosity, because he's clearly a fuzz, friend of the fuzz.
He certainly is. He's one of the real fuzzmeisters right now.
Do you have any idea what fuzz he uses?
Yeah, he uses our Astrotone fuzz quite a bit into our King of Tone. Sometimes he'll run the Astrotone and both sides of the King of Tone, and that drives his Fender amp pretty crazy. And he also likes the full tone octave fuzz. He'll run that sometimes even along with the other pedals. And those are his main dirt pedals.
Yeah, he's definitely been one of the guys that I've been checking out. I really dig his new CD. So
glad to hear that. And you know what? Seeing him in concert, it just takes it to another level, because he really gets these grooves going, and the atmosphere is. You know, I went to Woodstock, but I had to go home before Hendrix played on Sunday because my dad had a gig, so I never got to see Hendrix. But that's what I feel is, you know, that vibe, it kind of comes over you. And I think that, you know, Gary's got that kind of a vibe. He's just really, really when I see him live, I just get blown away every time.
Yeah, he's the thing I like about him. I mean, we're here to talk about your pedals, but just, you know, the thing I like about him is he's he's not like super fancy player. But what he plays is just right. So
exactly. And he's not afraid to play a song differently every night.
No. Now, so we were talking about your dual analog delay. We have a sound clip. This is played by Doug Doppler. So let's hear what that sounds like. Nice.
Cool.
Now, since we're talking about delays, I think probably I would like to mention, you know, someone that probably made delay and just did something just totally unique with it, The Edge. In the movie It Might Get Loud, that he's playing what looked like a Memory Man pedal.
Yes.
Done by you.
Yes.
So what did you do on that he was, I guess, testing out?
Yeah, well, basically, they said, look, we want you to go on the ocean, the side of the ocean there on this cliff, and bring your amp out there and the guitar and just, you know, play something. We're going to just do a little filmy thing. And he grabbed a Deluxe Memory Man that had our sticker on the side of it, which I found really odd, because U2 is such a non-commercial band. I was so happy to see that on there, because, you know, I figured he would cover it up or something, but he didn't care. He just put it out there in the amp and jammed along with the ocean. And what we did on his pedal, I believe, actually, I did one for Daniel Lanois, which I don't speak French, but I think that's his name. And he works with U2 a lot as a producer and collaborator. And he was showing it to The Edge, and he's like, wow, that one sounds good. And he said, oh, this is because Analog Man modified it. And so he called me right up, and he got one for himself. But they basically have our one thing we do to those is we double the delay time, which is kind of a complicated and expensive modification. But the main thing to the sound that we do is we fix a couple of small problems that the original Deluxe Memory Man had with input impedance was poor, so the sound is kind of dull, even on the dry sound. We make the delays a little longer, and we also give it a little more headroom, because they tend to overload quite easily. So those are the three mods that make them sound a little better.
Very cool. Now, there's one pedal that I found on your site that I thought was really cool, the Beano Boost. And you talk about that's supposed to emulate a Dallas Rangemaster. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, it's kind of a magic little pedal. Very simple pedal, one germanium transistor, and if you play that into, you know, solid state amp on two, you're going to say, what, this thing must be broken. It just sounds like crap. But what it does is it takes these certain frequencies and just kicks your amp with these frequencies and makes your amp have a nice crunchy distortion. And into the right amp, with as long as the amp is up loud enough to start working and your guitar is loud enough and you can set the pedal loud enough to kick the amp, it's just a wonderful, real classic rock tone.
Well, we actually have a sound clip. This is a Les Paul plugged into a JTM-45, obviously using the Beano Boost.
That's it, and that sounded like Doug Doppler also.
I believe so, yeah. It's got a little inspiration from Queen and way back to Mr. Les Paul, you know.
Right on.
Of like 15 guitars going there.
Yeah. Right on. The Les Pulverizer.
Exactly.
There you go.
See, that's what you need to create. You need to create one of those pedals.
Well, actually, I had a guy email me last week. He wants us to make him a Les Pulverizer. It looks just like the original one. He's going to bolt it on a guitar, but it's actually just going to be a Boss Delay. But there's going to be an Analog Man Les Pulverizer out there soon.
You'll have to modify the Bixby to put it on there. That's what he did.
That's right.
He would grind it out. So, if you need any pictures, I have pictures of his actual ones.
Oh, I'll keep that in mind because he might have some, but he might need some better ones. That would be great.
Because I went to the auction. So the Les
Paul
auction.
I heard that
auction.
Those Les Pulverizers sold for pretty ridiculous money.
Yeah, everything did, but yeah, it was they went. I think one of them went for like $20,000 alone. So.
Whew.
Wow.
It was insane.
Pretty good for something that really didn't do anything. It was all just tomfoolery going on backstage playing along with tapes.
Yeah, I think eventually all it did was like a start and stop, or maybe that was about it. So
it was so corny when you see those old clips he did on YouTube, but back then people thought that was really outrageous. It's like, wow.
Yep, he was a genius, that's for sure. I mean, he knew how to market himself. Well, we're coming to the end of the show. Why don't you let everybody know, again, remind them what the code is for the 10% discount, and then how they find you and where they purchase your pedals.
Yeah, well, our main website is analogman.com, but we've broken off. We have a shopping cart website. It has all that kind of e-commerce crap on it, and that's buyanalogman, BUYANALOGMAN.com. And if you go on to buyanalogman.com and you put an Analog Man handmade pedal in your shopping cart, when you check out, there's a little box for the coupon code, and just type FLO in there, and you should be ready to save some cash.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Mike, for taking the time. I know you're on the East Coast. We seem to get a lot of guests on the East Coast that stay up late for us. It's very nice of you to do it.
Anyone who's emailed me, they'll know that I work late, because I after everyone goes home, I take a nap, and I usually work till just about midnight every night to get things done. So it's not uncommon for me at all.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for doing it.
Thank you.
So next week we have our in-house guests. We'll have the band Incendio. And just so you know, some of our future guests we have coming up are Taylor Guitars, Kanalea Ukuleles, Frank Marino, and Norm from Norm Rares Guitars. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Have a good night, everybody.